material to talk about in this Masechta. As I mentioned, it's long as it is, but also it's slow loaded. People don't appreciate just how loaded Masechta Brachos is. And this first daf, we can go off on tangents, we can talk about general things, we can talk about the actual things in front of us on the page. There's just so much, and I noticed that in the Rabbi Reichman's Rishima Shurim for Soloveitchik, for Daf Beis Amud Aleph, I brought in the other day the whole Sefer on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, but for that Sefer for Soloveitchik Shurim on Brachos, for Daf Beis Amud Aleph, he has 45 pages. So there's, we could spend quite a lot of time on this daf, but we do want to try to get as far as we can. A lot of what he discusses, just so you know if you want to take a look, he talks about the question of Shemei Ka'ona for Kriya Shema, has quite a lot devoted to that. God willing, we'll return to that subject head on, the subject of Shemei Ka'ona, and we'll try to incorporate that back into that discussion. But for now, let's look at the first Machlokas Rishon in the Shas. So what is at issue here? So the Mishnah, typical of this Masechta, the Mishnah hides a lot of things in the words. So the main point of the Mishnah is what? What's our Mishnah trying to tell us?
It's the earliest time you say Kriya Shema.
That's a part of what they want to say, right? Although that actually ends up getting overwhelmed by other material in the Mishnah. It starts off that way, not asking what is the earliest time, but that doesn't seem to be much of a discussion. And most of the space in the Mishnah is about the other side, is about the end time. It's the latest time. So that's itself interesting, and there is quite a lot to say about that. But the first part that's kind of taken for granted, that kind of sails past without much analysis, although, see, it's certainly not that simple, is the opening time for Kriya Shema. And there's a lot to take note. There are many who comment on the fact that the Mishnah finds an unusual way of conveying this point, not just telling us Seisa Kochavim, which the Gemara is going to tell you that's what it means, that the Kohanim who were needing of Harav Shemesh, who were waiting for the sun to come so that they can finish their process of Tara, and then eat Truma. So that is how the Mishnah identifies Seisa Kochavim. And why exactly that is an interesting question. So it sounds like it's in the spirit of Yaglo Tara V'yadir. The Gemara asks, you know, why do we do it this way? Why don't we just say Seisa Kochavim? This is the line here in the towards the bottom of the page, So why don't we just say that? Why doesn't the Mishnah just say that it's Seisar Kochavim? So there's the Gemara Milsag of Orchei Kamash Milan. We're telling you something, presumably in the spirit of Yagdol Torah V'Yadir. Let's throw in some other Torah here, wherever we can. That Kohanim Emes Kochli B'Truma Mishas Seisar Kochavim. So we learned that. The Hakamashma, the Kaparol Ma'akva, and other details also come from this, and the Gemara then goes off talking about that a little bit. So there are some more Hashgafic discussions of why the Tana chose to associate Kriyashma with the Tara process, with the eating of Truma. Is there a statement there about the merging of spirituality and physicality that eating Truma is perhaps representational of? So there are some interesting points that are raised about the choice of association that the Mishnah makes. But with all this getting in the way a little bit, you could miss the point that what seems to be pretty straightforward is Kriya Shema starts at Seisar Kochavim. Hi.
Isn't there a discussion about whether one is allowed to say Divrei Torah when they're tummy?
So that's also a Sugya Bracha. So what kind of tumah we're talking about, though, it depends what kind of tumah we're talking about. So that will also, is actually a sugya later, hopefully get to that. But what seems to get obscured with the discussions of Truma and all the different positions of Sol Shema and Kriya Shema is that, at least as far as the Mishnah is concerned, let's see, the Gemara makes it a little bit more complicated, but at least as far as the Mishnah is concerned, we seem to have a pretty straightforward din that Kriya Shema starts at Seisar Kochavim. So if that's the case, that raises a problem for us. As the Rishonim discuss in the first Machlokas Rishonim in Shas. So what is the issue? Somebody help me out. Sorry?
We daven at Shkia.
So we daven at Shkia, and sometimes even earlier. So, and this is an issue. This is not just some modern kula that now ends up challenging what the Gemara says. This was more of an issue for the Rishonim than it is for us, because in their day, they didn't have artificial lights. So they were much more concerned about being out at night. And that's something that also impacts Hilchos Chanukah as well, the difference in how the world has related to that issue. But in the time of the Rishonim, so they didn't have artificial light, so people were not so excited about going to a 10 o'clock Maariv. And the desire to be off the streets before it got really dark was much more of a factor. So if you think we invented the idea of davening Maariv early, no, the Rishonim certainly were ready, assuming that that was the prevalent practice, and presumably more prevalent practice than it is now, because that would be the latest time you'd want to be out on the road. So if that's the case, so then it seems to create a problem. And here, there are a number of ways to look at it. So you mentioned that we daven Maariv at Shkia, so that probably is the most common practice. What is also going to emerge a little bit here, and it's really a sugi on the fourth parak, but it's going to be very relevant to here, so we'll end up talking about that, and I'll give you more makoros to see about this, is that there is a machlokas regarding Maariv as well. So if we wait till Shkia even to daven Maariv, so that already causes a problem, because Shkia is before Tzeis. Now, as Hashem, when we get to Beis Amid Beis, pretty soon, because it'll be relevant, we'll have a little bit of a survey of the classic issue of when is Shkia, when is Tzeis, how exactly do we determine these things, and the long-standing machlokas on that topic. So that is, no pun intended, soon on our horizon. But the just for now, we know that Shkia is earlier than Tzeis by how much, that's going to be a big part of the discussion. But Shkia is sometime earlier than Tzeis. So if we're davening Maariv at Shkia, and we're not waiting till Tzeis, and again, those days, Davka would not want to be out at Tzeis, so what happens to Kriya Shema? But it's not only Tzeis that is an issue, because in the fourth parak, and it's going to be relevant to here as well, in the fourth parak there is a machlokis for Yehuda and Chachamim about the Zmanim of Tefillah. And what emerges is that Zman Mincha is subject to a machlokas. And this is going to be a very important background for us to understand Tosfos, that there is this machlokas as to how the Zmanim play out. That according to Rabbi Yehuda, Mincha only goes until what we call Plag HaMincha, which is a halachic hour and a quarter before dark. And presumably, although this is an interesting assumption, but the assumption for now is that when Mincha ends, Maariv starts. Maybe not such an obvious assumption, but that is apparently our premise for now. So that then means that we have a machlokes, Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim, about the stopping time for Mincha and the starting time for Maariv. So if that's the case, then those who follow Rabbi Yehuda, and it's a good question who that refers to, because that might be more than we think, so those who follow Rabbi Yehuda could be davening Maariv already at Plag. So that is significantly further away from Tzeis HaKochav. And especially nowadays, so at least on Fridays, there is a widespread practice to be davening earlier, even if it's not done the rest of the week. But at least on Fridays, for its own considerations, there's more of an openness to davening earlier. And once again, so the question is going to present itself. So what I'd like you to be aware of as we look at Rashi and Tosfos is the differences in terms of their presentations and the way you can kind of graph out the dialogue here, and note that it is not exactly parallel. So what is Rashi's position? Somebody help me out. What does Rashi say? Yeah? David? Raising your hand?
Yeah.
but you would be. Yeah. Yes, that's what happens when you scratch your head. Yeah.
I don't actually remember what Rashi said about
it. So what you were about to say was that Rashi throws in the fact that, and it's also interesting, I mean, if you want to really be medayik, the fact that he is commenting later than you would think, right? Because really his comment should have been in the first Divrei HaMasu, because he's addressing the earliest time for Kriyat Shema. So for whatever reason, we're not going to be that medayik and everything, but it's just somewhat interesting that he throws in the comment a drop later than it fits, because he's addressing Sosman Kriyat Shema. So he's saying the opinion of Rabbi Elazar that there is a limit to when Kriyat Shema goes, and this happens not to be opinion accepted by anyone, but that's the first statement in the Mishnah, that we only have up until the first watch to recite Kriyat Shema. So Rashi comments on that, that after that, Misham Ve'elech Avr Zman, after that, it's too late. Why? Dulon Mikri Tu Zman Shchiva. That these mysterious terms, Shchiva and Kima, and we noted we should keep our eye out for, is this just a somewhat poetic way of saying night and day? Or is there a reason the Torah doesn't use that language and gives us some other marker that roughly correlates to night and day, but is not exactly the same thing? But here, the opinion of Rabbi Elazar is that Shchiva is interpreted similar to the way we have Kima interpreted. Now, we noted yesterday that the Kesef Mishnah found it problematic that we kind of mix and match these views, because when it comes to Kriyat Shema at night, since we don't paskin like Rabbi Elazar, so we hold that lahalacha, it applies all night. Now, that's also not a complete statement, because what we see in our Mishnah is that there's two more opinions. There is Rabbi Gamliel and Chachamim, and Rabbi Gamliel is the one who holds that it goes all night, and the Chachamim say it goes until Chatzos. But the Mishnah already tells us, before you go any further, that they agree in concept. That Rabbi Gamliel and Chachamim agree that really the Torah allows us to say Kriyat Shema all night, and that that has how to interpret Shchiva. And the idea of limiting it to Chatzos is a harchaka midrabanan, is a safeguard so that we should not come to neglect it and say, okay, you know, get home and it's late and I'm tired and you want to have some dinner first and you want to watch a football game or you want to whatever it is, and then you end up falling asleep and before you know it, the night is over. So in order to prevent that, and Gemara goes into more detail about this a little bit later, so Chachamim advocated that we have this cutoff point and that we make sure to say Kriyat Shema before Chatzos. Now, the impact of that gezeira is itself a subject to a fascinating sugya, so much to pack in here. God willing, we'll get to that soon. But it's also a question how we paskin. And whether or not we accept this gezeira is actually not clear. But that's what we know from the Mishnah, and we'll look into it more detail in the future. But from the Mishnah, we see there's two different opinions, whether it's bounded to Chatzos or not. So machlok is how we paskin. It may also tie into the question of Pesach night, whether there is a similar relationship to Afikomen and to the mitzvah of Matzah Pesach night, where we may have similar markers in time. So all of that is something we'll have to get to, but what we know from the Mishnah is that the two opinions agree in concept. They agree that b'shachbacha means all night. And the first opinion, one that doesn't get accepted, understands it differently. And the Kesef Mishnah's question is the fact that we mix and match, apparently, because during the daytime, we understand it to be limited, that there is a sofsman Kriyat Shema. And had we accepted Rabbi Elazar's opinion, so then it would be parallel. Both night and day would have a small fraction of the day that is roi for Kriyat Shema, and they would be consistent with each other. So the fact that we mix and match, that we assume Kriyat Shema, we understand like Chacham and Rabbi Gamliel that the Torah means all night. And Kriyat Shema, the daytime, we don't mean all day, but we have it limited to Sosman Kriyat Shema. So the Kesef Mishnah derived from that it must be that Sofman Kriya Shema is Drabanan, and that really Menhat Torah, it's also all day, and we saw that the later Nosei Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch didn't accept that. And a part of it is that the language isn't exactly parallel, that Peshachbacha does not really match exactly B'kumecha, that B'kumecha conveys the beginning of the time that you're awake, and B'shachbacha doesn't seem to mean the beginning of the time that you go to sleep. That was the Rabbi Elazar understood it, the beginning of the time that you go to sleep. But the word itself doesn't seem to have that connotation, at least according to the majority view. So they see the two words as not exactly parallel, that B'kumecha is the beginning of your time up, and B'shachbacha is the entirety of the time that you would be sleeping. Did you?
The Kesef Mishnah is paralleling Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that basically there's no Zman, but we just have a Zman so that we don't forget, or this
not,
is
that's not about Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is not involved in this point. Rabbi Yehuda has machlokes about when Tefillah is.
Oh, okay.
Right, so he doesn't come into this.
Sorry,
it is going to come up later, so it was important.
But you need it by Chatzos so that you don't end up missing out.
That's Chachamim. Chachamim.
Chachamim, right.
Right, so the Gzeira, something like that, that basically there's an artificial limit placed on it, but that's not really what the Torah is actually asking. So you're right, yes, it would follow the Chachamim's view that just like they really believe that, yes, the Torah did allow us to say Kriya Shema all night, but they said it's not a good idea to leave it, and therefore we'll cap it at Chatzos. So the Kesef Mishnah understands something similar was done for the daytime, that really it could have been all day, and they capped it at what we call so Zman Kriya Shema. So that goes to this question of Zman Shechiva, and the majority view seems to understand it as meaning the whole time you're lying down, while the view of Rabbi Elazar is that it only means the time that you are beginning to go to sleep. So Rashi has this comment about that, that after that, that's not any more Shechiva. And then he goes back to the first part. And before that, also not. So before the first statement in the Mishnah, we call it Seisa Kochav. So now let's keep track of how Rashi deals with this. This is a couple of stages. It says Lefika Chakire Kodem Lekain Lo Yatsi Deichel Baso. So therefore, can't fulfill the mitzvah beforehand. It has to wait until Seis in order to fulfill it. So if that's the case, so considering our mitzvahs, what emerges is really two questions. Rashi has to answer two separate questions. How so? What are the two separate questions? Somebody help me out. Yeah, Caleb.
When is Tzid?
Sorry?
When is Tzid?
No, that's not. He's not addressing that. That is going to be a question for us, yeah, but he's not addressing it. So he's saying, given that the Mishnah seems to conflict with our practice, there ends up being two questions, which Rashi answers in two different ways. Yes.
First, I guess, is how you fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema.
Okay, yeah. So apparently we're not accomplishing it. When we do it in shul?
And
yeah.
The second one is, why are we doing it in shul?
Okay. Right. So because of Rashi's Shita, it's going to emerge as two different things to address. That, yes, indeed, we are not Yotzei Kriya Shema with what we do in shul. And we assume that what all of Klal Yisrael is doing must have some basis for it. So he's not coming and saying, well, it's a big mistake. Everyone should stop all these early minyanim and go out in the middle of the night with no streetlights. He's not saying that. So he assumes that Klal Yisrael knows what they're doing. So then he has to answer another question. So it's not just that everyone is unaware of this halacha. In general, by the way, I had debates with people about different issues like this. So it's good to be aware of that. We try to come from the default position that Klal Yisrael is not just making a huge mistake. And that it's not just that, oh, no one else knew about this din before, and no one read the Mishnah, and therefore somebody should get up and try. And that there must be some reason why they're doing what they're doing. So it's worth noting that this is the attitude here that we're shown in pretty much across the board, we'll be assuming, even though they all have different ways of addressing the question. But the assumption is that it's not just that all of Klal Yisrael didn't read the Mishnah and doesn't know what to do. But presumably, there's a reason why this is happening. So Rashi, because he takes the premise that we're not yotze in shul, doesn't say, okay, so then let's get rid of these minyanim. He says there must be a reason why, and he has to answer that question also. What are we accomplishing by saying Kriya Shema in shul? Now, other Rishonim address the premise differently. So for them, it's not necessarily going to be two questions. It's going to be one question. And so, for example, Tosus does not work off the same premise. Tosus doesn't take the same approach. So according to Tosus, you are Yotze in Shul. So then he doesn't need to have two separate answers. He has one answer. You're Yotze in Shul, and that's why we say it in Shul. And then he only has one question. So how does that match with the din of the Mishnah? And we'll see soon enough he has his own approach to dealing with this. So if indeed we're not Yotze, so Rashi has these two questions. So how do we address our mitzvah min HaTorah, and why are we spending time on this in shul? So says Rashi, in kein lama karno sabei sekhnesa. So he answers the second question first, right, which itself is interesting. Again, we medayik more or less, but the second question is not necessarily the most urgent question from the Mishnah, but he deals with that one first. Says, why do we read Kriya Shema in Shul then? Kidei la'amu tefila mitoch devrei Torah. And this he has based on Yerushalmi. V'hachitani based on Baruchas Yerushalmi. Right, so therefore, addressing the second question first, so what's this idea of why is it that we recite Kriya Shema if we're not fulfilling the mitzvah? So he's actually comparing this to something else we're familiar with, but you may not realize that that's what he's doing. What role does Kriya Shema serve when we daven Ma'ariv before the Zman? Yeah, Caleb? So that is very interesting.
Because I know it's not as strict by Ma'ariv.
Oh, we so that, right. It, so right? The sugya, you're right. So it's a sugya, just to say a word about that. That is something to notice about, that's the dog that didn't bark in the Sherlock Holmes language. That basically... right. Very good. So the idea that your answer is far more intuitive and Rashi doesn't say it. So that's itself something that's worth noting. Because that could have been a very likely answer to this question. Now, just to give a drop of background about that, it's a sugya later on, but you're also going to need to know this for Tosfos. So soon on Daf Dalet, the Gemara is going to take up the topic of Smichas Gula Tefila and address, first of all, the nature of that obligation, about which much fascinating has been written. But we know that it applies at Shachar's time. We know that we are very careful to juxtapose, without any interruption, Gal Yisrael as part of Berachos Kriya Shema into Shmoneh Esrei and go smoothly one into the other. The Gemara has a question whether this also applies to Ma'ariv. And our conclusion is a machlokas in the Gemara, but our conclusion is that it does apply to Ma'ariv. And Caleb is right, even though the Gemara doesn't spell this out, but the Rishonim bring it up, that we see from certain nuances in Halacha that we'll discuss then, that there's some kind of a split there, because on the one hand, the conclusion is that we do require Smichas Gula Tefila for Ma'ariv, but there are certain Halachos that show that it's not as chomer as Shachar's, and that's something we'll deal with in its time. So that would seem to be a very likely answer to the question. If it's so important to have Smichas Gula Tefila, so then that's enough reason. Let's say Kriya Shema, let's keep Ma'ariv the same way it is. Keep the format of Ma'ariv, even if we're not fulfilling the mitzvah of Kriya Shema, because of this need for Smichas Gula Tefila. So the fact that Rashi does not say that is itself very interesting. May reflect a certain shita about Smichas Gula Tefila. How so? Just to throw out some possibilities. It could be that in order to fulfill Smichas Gula Tefila, you need to have actual fulfillment of Kriyat Shema. And maybe Rashi is assuming, therefore, that it's not going to be accomplished without the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema, which has practical implications on its own. Let's say for Friday, Shabbos morning davening, if the minyan's late, so is it acceptable to be Yosei Kriyat Shema first and then go to shul for Smichas Gula Tefila, or does that create a problem? And another possibility is that maybe Smichas Gula Tefila is only really necessary when it's the Zman of both. But if it's not yet the Zman of Kriyat Shema, maybe we don't have that same urgency for Smichas Gula Tefila. So there are theories as to why it is that Rashi doesn't use this answer. But it's noteworthy that Rashi doesn't say what Caleb suggested, which would have seemed like the most likely reason. So if it's not about Smichas Gula Tefila, so what else is it about? It's comparable to something else we do during the day. What am I looking for? No, although that also is worthy of discussion, how that fits in, and that itself could also have been an answer. Right? We have to wonder, what is the Zman for Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim? Does it match exactly Kriya Shema or not? So that's also an important issue that's kind of floating around here, because Miman of Shach, maybe, that if it's really tied into the same Zman of Shema, so then that's a problem, and then we have to address that. And if it's not, then that's also interesting. So then go back again to Caleb's question. So then the answer is Echad Yetzias Mitzrayim. That would be a good answer. But Tosfos doesn't say that either. Your own?
Talmud Torah.
So Talmud Torah, it seems to have, we use the word Torah, so it sounds like it is something in that area. But it's a specific type of Talmud Torah. It's not just the general mitzvah of Talmud Torah. There's a certain functionality to it.
Is it similar to like Mincha that we specifically try to say Ashrei before?
That's what I was looking for, right? So it seems like this parallels Ashrei. That we have a notion, and we'll spend a little bit of time later just looking at the sugya head on, that comes from the Yerushalmi. But we have this notion of La'amo tefila mitoch divrei Torah, which seems to be a fulfillment of a din in the Mishnah. That in the beginning of the fifth parak of Brachos, the Mishnah tells us, Ein Om Din L'Hispalel, that is really a sentence you need to finish, because by itself sounds strange, you don't get up to daven. You do get up to daven, but there's a requirement for how. You should not get up to daven when you are transitioning immediately from something not conducive to a focused Shemona Esrei. So you don't want to be doing something very trivial or distracting and go right into Shemona Esrei. From that wouldn't put you in the right frame of mind for Shemona Esrei. But the Gemara over there in the fifth parak is going to discuss that Torah is not perfect either. Because if you're going to get involved in a ksos and a nesivis and thinking about all the different svaras, to do that right before Shemona Esrei is also not conducive to focusing on Shemona Esrei. So we want some Torah, but we don't want Torah that's going to be too distracting. So Ashrei fits the bill. So for Mincha, it works well for us to pause before Shemona Esrei and say Ashrei. The Gemara also is going to come up soon that highlights the value of saying Ashrei three times a day. So it's a good opportunity to stick in a third Ashrei, and that will allow us to transition from whatever it is that is not so conducive to Shemona Esrei, and then go from there to Shemona Esrei. Hi.
What about the way, and this is probably going to sound like a problem, because I think it might be, what about the way that people often, especially in a rushed setting, happen to just rush through Ashrei completely?
So,
and sometimes you'll have members of the congregation that are like still halfway through and now trying to, and stress about catching up and answering Kaddish and then trying to start Shemona Esrei with everyone.
Yeah, we live in the real world that has challenges and priorities, so we can't get everything. But in terms of getting a few psukim, you're already accomplishing this goal. In terms of the idea of saying Ashrei three times a day, so you might want to fill it in later. It is more important for sure to be with the shul in the Kaddish and Shemona Esrei part, so finishing Ashrei in its totality before is not the highest priority, but it has its value to it. And the idea of not knowing what you're saying, so normally that's a drawback. Here it's a little bit the point, because if you're going to start thinking about your poetic interpretations of Ashrei, that's also not going to help so much for your Shmoneh Esrei. So the idea that whether this was always the intent or whether this is just kind of how it plays out, but we use Ashrei as a symbol of something that you just know very well and you can recite without thinking about it. So that's not necessarily perfect, but it's a little bit helpful for this goal of having some kind of Divrei Torah before Shmoneh Esrei. That's not frivolity or otherwise inappropriate, but also not the most distracting and attention-consuming kind of Torah. So that we have for Mincha. So what about Ma'ariv? So Rashi is telling us that we have something similar for Ma'ariv, that since normally we would want to integrate Kriya Shema with Shmoneh Esrei for a number of other reasons, including ideally to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. So once it's there, it serves the same function. It does the same thing that Ashrei does at Mincha time. And if it's not going to fulfill the mitzvah, because it's too early, it will still have that secondary function. It still will accomplish that it does the Ashrei job. So even if our minyan is too early, it's still worth having the same structure. Says Rashi, not because of the more intuitive factors of Smichus Gula Tefila, or because of Zechiras Hasidus Mitzrayim, but because of Ashrei, essentially. Because of Kedei La'amo Tefila Mitoch Divrei Torah. Yes, sir?
What about the concentration that Shema requires?
So, what about it? Meaning, so
does that, well, you mentioned that the words of Torah shouldn't be too intense to take away from your
focusing on Shema doesn't mean that it's going to occupy your attention after you're finished. It's not that kind of kavana. You know, you should know what you're saying when you're saying it, but it's not that you're going to be thinking about the machlokas, the Rashba, and the Tosfos, how to understand the dinim of Kriya Shema, presumably. If you do, you're on a higher madriga than I am. So that's the first part of Rashi. And then Rashi addresses what would seem to be the bigger question of what happens to our mitzvah of Kriya Shema, which we just said you're not fulfilling then. So Rashi addresses that the way we do that here is Chiddush. L'fika chova aleinu l'krosa mishatecha. So we said before about that shrine that all Klal Yisrael needs to fix things. So yes, he's not getting rid of the early minyanim, but just we should make sure that people are aware that they're not done, that they have to repeat the Kriya Shema afterwards, mishatecha. That this is going to have to happen after it's actually dark. And then Rashi throws in a bigger chiddush. Because I'll just note that here's where Rashi deviates from what we do nowadays. Because what will emerge, just to kind of spoil the ending on some front, is that we don't follow in practice really either Rashi or Tosfos on this issue. Because of the next line. Or at least not l'charchila, in terms of the next line. That Rashi, after telling you, okay, make sure to say Kriya Shema again, so that's something we're familiar with in practice, right? So you go to shul Friday night when it's early, and they'll make an announcement, repeat Kriya Shema later on. So that we know from our practice. That doesn't surprise us. But it's the next line in Rashi that's more of a surprise. Regarding this obligation to say it later, what does he say? You have a kriyas parsha rishona, sha'adam kare amitaso yatsa. So here, there's a number of chidushim that were so mechodesh that Tosfos got very upset about this. And felt that this is a very problematic suggestion. So this is where Rashi departs from our practice. To say, okay, say Kriya Shema again later, that we're familiar with. But the way he suffices Kriya Shema al Hamita, which against the sugya that's coming up in a little bit, and there it's not for the purpose of the mitzvah, but Rashi says you can use it for the purpose of the mitzvah. So what are the chidushim in that statement that are going to trouble Tosfos? Tosfos is going to have four objections to this. Somebody want to help me out? Where are some of the objections? What's the problem? What's the chiddush? Some are more easily accessible than others. Caleb?
Is one yotzei if one only says the first paragraph.
Okay, so that's one chiddush. Now, we indicated on the first day that this is the subject of machlokas, that the question of whether that is indeed a fulfillment of the mitzvah min haTorah is not at all pashut. So I mentioned the Prichadish's analysis of all the different views. But Rashi seems to be taking a stand here that what is Kriyat Shema min haTorah? One paragraph. Now, it still opens up a lot of questions, even if you accept that, because still, why wouldn't we do the mitzvah b'shlemusa later on? So there's a lot to address about that. We're going to run out of time, so we'll have to fill some of this in next time just to get some of the questions on the table. So one is Tosis challenges Rashi on this, and it's a little bit of a funny challenge because it's a debatable point, but clearly Rashi knows what he's getting into by saying that. Meaning, if Rashi just said, Kriya Shema Lamita is enough, and then we pointed out, well, wait a minute, I don't say the whole Kriya Shema Lamita, it's only one paragraph. So then that would be more of a question. But Rashi clearly is assuming that it's one paragraph, and he's telling you that I'm okay with that. So Tostus has an objection against that position, because he's not agreeing to that. But it's less of a challenge to Rashi, because Rashi is taking that as part of the statement, so he knows what he's getting into when he says that, say, Kriya Shema Lamita, as far as how much of Kriya Shema it actually includes. What else? Is there an issue? There's three other issues that Tostus has. So another one is that the Kriya Shema Lamita is not necessarily something that everyone does. It's not necessarily such a clear obligation. That the Gemara refers to it as a recommendation, essentially, as a source of protection. And it doesn't actually have to be Kriya Shema. That the idea is that in order to have protection during the time of sleeping, it's kedai to say some learning before going to bed. And it could have been something else too. But we decided on saying Kriya Shema. So if this is something that's not imposed as a clear obligation, so how can we rely on that, that this is what people, this is what people are doing in order to fulfill the mitzvah? Right, again, Tosfos even more so than Rashi, this is worth also appreciating, that Tosfos even more so than Rashi is working off the premise that what the Jewish people are doing is right, and we just got to figure out how. So Rashi is saying it's right to a degree, that the minyanim are okay, but make sure people remember to supplement. Tosfos is going to not even require that much, as we'll see when we see it inside. But those are two of the questions. Third question is, what about the brachos? If you're going to just say Kriya Shema Lamita, so you're not saying Brachos Kriya Shema. Now, I already kind of alerted you to this possibility also on day one, that the relationship between the brachos, what we call Brachos Kriya Shema, and Kriya Shema is unclear. And that may also be at odds between Rashi and Tosfos. That Tosfos might be assuming a certain relationship from Birchos Kriya Shema to Kriya Shema that Rashi is not assuming. But that's another question. And the final question Tosfos has is the sugya of Smichas Gula Tefillah. Because when the Gemara debates that point later on, the Gemara has two different scenarios as to what we should choose from. So either we have Smichas Gula Tefillah from Ma'ariv, which means that Ma'ariv mimics the pattern of Shacharis. Both of them are Shema then Shmon Esrei. Or the other possibility, the rejected possibility, is what's called Tefillos Be'emsa Tiknum. I think somebody used this phrase on the first day about bookending. So that really is the rejected opinion, essentially, that had that view that maybe we should bookend, that we should start and end our day with Kriya Shema. And all three tefillos would then be in between. Here we're not using the halachic day of starting from Ma'ariv, but we're using our functional day of morning till sleeping time. So then, if you took that view, it would be first say Shema, then Shachris Shmona Esrei, and Mincha Shmona Esrei, and then Maariv Shmona Esrei, and then a Kriya Shema at the end, Tfilos Be'emsa Tikna. But we don't accept that opinion. So says Tosis, Rashi, you're going right back to that. In your model, the mitzvah of Kriya Shema is now Kriya Shema Lamita. So that's the opinion we don't follow. That becomes Tfilos Be'emsa Tikna. A Shema in the beginning and a Shema in the end, and all three Tfilos in the middle. So Tosis is going to have its own answer, and we'll dive in our Tefillah Be'emsa in a minute, but just to kind of consolidate where we're at so we'll know where to pick up from. So what you see is, look how much is packed into this machlokas, right? That here Rashi has an issue which forces him to answer two separate questions. And that itself is going to be a topic of debate. But Tosis is going to be particularly fascinating because, first of all, Tosis is going to take the completely other approach of validating what we do in Shul. And how he does that, we'll have to see. And therefore, he's not going to have the other question of why do we bother, because it answers itself. We bother because it does fulfill the mitzvah. But much of Tosis is arguing on Rashi's alternative strategy, which is itself interesting because that's not really the crux of it. So whether Rashi's other idea is a good one or not doesn't really go to the core of things. Like the real machlokas here is, are you yotze when we daven Maariv and Shul? So it's noteworthy, I think, that so much attention in Tosfos when arguing in that point is not about validating that issue or not. It's about attacking the alternative strategy. That because Rashi assumes we're not Yotze, and I have to give you another way to do it, Tosfos focuses most of his firepower on that point of why that's not a good enough way to do it. So here, our original point of, you see, we're assuming that Klal Yisrael is doing something valid, that comes out in an even more powerful way from Tosfos, that no, Rashi can't be right. Why? Not because we can disprove his premise, but because Klal Yisrael is presumably doing the right thing, and what Rashi suggests for them, Tosfos doesn't think works. So it goes back to the behavior of Klal Yisrael as the real issue here, which itself is noteworthy and interesting. But we see also through these questions, each one of these questions may be its own sugya and may surround this whole other issue. Again, part of how much is packed into this first daf. So we see all four of those questions could require its own svara to address. Why does Rashi think one paragraph is enough and Tosfos doesn't? Why does Tosfos think that you have to have the brachas to be yotze and Rashi doesn't? Why is Tosfos concerned about deviating from the Smichas Gula Tefillah position to Tefillah Be'emsa Tikna, and Rashi's not afraid? Does Rashi have a different understanding of Kriya Shema Lamita? Right, so the four questions Tosfos asks on this one line in Rashi, Rashi just so innocently says five words, and Tosfos has four questions, opens up four sugyas. Each one could have its, each one is really its own machlokas. You ever see so much packed into so little? That because of that one sentence, Tosfos essentially opens up a forefront battle here. Each one has its own debate to have as to why is Rashi not concerned about that. So some of those we'll reserve for their sugyas later on. Some of those we'll try to say a little bit as we see Tosfos. And Tosfos' suggestion is going to raise even more controversy than Rashi's suggestion in terms of what we do. So a lot to lay ahead of us, but first, Tefillah Be'emsa. Okay, so, you kidding us?